Well, it's a blessing to be here and worship the Lord again this morning. I thought about bringing a few blocks along and stacking them up here. I decided the entertainment value was probably more than the educational value, but maybe you would have remembered the start of the message here. I was thinking about how to begin the message for the morning, and you hear preachers say this often, and maybe it's because they know what they're going to talk about and you don't, but I was impressed with how what Will had to share this morning in a devotional and what our Sunday school lesson was about, how it kind of tied in with the thought for this morning. But my thought of the blocks was, you see children take and they stack up a little tower of blocks and it keeps getting higher and they put a lot of work into it, and somebody comes along and maybe they intentionally knock it over. Sometimes they just accidentally bump it or knocks it over, or maybe they actually just didn't stack them quite straight and they fell over. But the end result's pretty much the same. There's a strewn heap of blocks on the floor and the tower is down, and they have a couple choices of what they can do at that point. You can either just give the blocks a kick and walk away, or you can kind of start rebuilding them, or maybe somebody else will help rebuild them. And I was thinking about this. This message kind of came to me. It's one of these messages that I have some disclaimers later. We'll talk about that. But we were down at Winchester for the school program the other evening, and they quoted this little poem about builders or wreckers, and I thought it fit so well. I just, if you were at Winchester, you're going to hear it the second time. If you weren't, you may remember this poem from before, but I'll just read it to you now. As I watched them tear a building down, a gag of men in a busy town, with a heave-ho and a lusty yell, they swung a beam and a sidewall fell. I asked the foreman, are these men skilled? And the men you'd hire if you wanted to build? He gave a laugh and said, no, indeed. Just common labor's all I need. I can easily wreck in a day or two what builders have taken years to do. And I thought to myself as I went my way, which of these roles have I tried to play? Am I a builder who works with care, measuring life by rule and square? Am I shaping my work to a well-made plan, patiently doing the best I can? Or am I a wrecker who walks the town, content with the labor of tearing down? O Lord, let my life and my labors be that which build for eternity. So, my title for the message this morning is Rebuilding Broken Walls. And this message came to me a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure why I'm sharing it this morning, but I just want to use the book of Nehemiah as inspiration for this morning on rebuilding. We get in situations where someone offends us by their words or their actions. Maybe there was a rumor going around about us that someone spread. Maybe someone was a little too blunt with us, or we were a little too blunt with them about a real or perceived problem in their life, and we thought we had to go fix it. There's many things. You can fill in the blank. There's many ways that trust is destroyed and our little block tower falls over. And Jesus said in Matthew 18 that offenses will come. We'll look at a few verses in Matthew 18 later on here. But what will we do when our tower crumbles? And I guess that's the question for this morning. Few disclaimers. I don't know that disclaimers are always necessary for messages, but I feel like this morning it's in order. First of all, I want to say that I'm embarrassed to admit that I've done my share of wrecking, and I hope to be more of a builder in my life, and hopefully I can do less wrecking and more building. Second of all, I do not have all the answers. I'm not sure why I felt like God was leading me to give this message. But the Bible does have answers to our questions. The Bible is the complete manual. Jesus gave us answers in Matthew 18. There's answers here that we can find in Nehemiah. And the next thing, disclaimer, is there's no specific situation or agenda. And I especially want to share this for the people that may possibly listen to this on the PMC website. They may say, well, what's going on at Keysville? Well, sometimes you just need to bring a message when God tells you to. Or it's maybe best to talk about these situations when there isn't a problem instead of waiting till there is, and then people feel like you're pointing fingers at them. So, and like I say, I do believe our church is unified. So with that all out of the way, I just look around at our society. I even think about the church here, the United Church of Christ. It was united. That's in their name, the United Church of Christ. How did it disband? Well, there's probably a lot of reasons. There's a whole bunch of things about the way they taught their youth and whether they embraced what their parents taught and the independent spirit that I'm going to do things my way, and they watered down the gospel and it wasn't any different than the world's teaching, which you can learn some things about conflict resolution from the world. And they didn't have unity is I guess one of the things. But we also look around at congregations and we see ones that just disappear. And there's many different cases for this. And you can probably think of five of them right off the top of your head of churches that have had struggles because of problems in leadership or people that took sides on some unresolved issue between this brother and this brother or this sister and this sister. And whatever it is, but there's pride, there's selfishness, there's people that are stubborn and independent, and nobody's going to tell me what to do. And these things all lead to problems, and we get accusations, and we get rumors started that may or may not be true, and soon our whole tower is down. But Nehemiah's got some inspiration. I want this to be a positive message. I don't want this to be a negative message where we're looking at all the broken down pieces, but how do we re-pick up those pieces? How do we keep these things from happening? And what do we do about it? I mentioned that the world has answers for conflict resolution. I just want to read you what, if you type in conflict resolution in AI, will give you these kind of answers nowadays. This is the world's answer, or a worldly constructed computer. Effective conflict resolution involves understanding and managing emotions, facilitating discussions, and increasing mutual understanding. Healthy conflict resolution strategies include empathizing with the other person's viewpoint, reacting calmly and respectfully, and being willing to forgive and move past the conflict. Unhealthy responses, such as explosive reactions, withdrawing love, and inability to compromise, can escalate conflicts and harm relationships. So there's some truth there. But what does the Bible have to say? Let's turn to Nehemiah and go down through. It would be nice to read the whole first five chapters of Nehemiah, but for the sake of time, we're not going to do that. Point number one comes from chapter 1, verses 6 and 7 here. And I've just, for this point, I just wrote down introspection. And that means self-examining, looking at yourself. The first part here, well, let's just read these verses. Let thine ear now be attentive, and let thine eyes and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee this day, before thee now, day and night, for the children of Israel, thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee. Both I and my father's house have sinned. We have dealt very corruptly against thee, and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the judgments which thou commandest thy servant Moses. And then we could keep on reading here. But here for these first two verses here, verse 6 and 7. And that, I just wrote down, to have a proper perspective of ourselves in a situation. We have a situation where we know it's not quite right between us and another person. What is the proper perspective between he understood God's perspective of they had sinned and he owned up, which is the second part of it. The second thing is to confess your part. And yes, some people do introspection and they place all the blame on themselves. Well, it must be me. And they do almost too much of that. And then others are like, well, it's their problem. I'm sorry I offended you. I mean, big deal. Let's move on. So we need to kind of get some balance in the middle, and thankfully we have people and brothers and sisters around us that can help us deal with these things. But one of the things that I do think about when people are easily offended, and I have to think about this in my own life, when I'm offended, what is the reason that I'm offended? And maybe it's because I built my tower a little bit too high. It's a lot easier to topple once it's up here than when it's only three blocks high. Doesn't take much. A little vibration of the floor and the tower is down. And is that the kind of person that I am? No, and that, I'm not saying that's always the case. I'm just using that as something to think about. The second part is confessing. So if you see here in Nehemiah, let's just read verses 8 to 10 here. He's confessing the sin of himself, the sin of the people. And this kind of ties in with the third point. These first three are going to come in rapid succession. God has the solution here. God's promises you can lean on. And he says, "Remember, I beseech thee, the words that thou hast commanded thy servant Moses, saying, if you transgress, I will scatter you abroad among the nations. But if you turn to me and keep my commandments and do them, though there were of you cast out unto the uttermost part of heaven, yet will I gather them from thence, and I will bring them unto the place that I have chosen to set my name there. Now these are thy servants and thy people, whom thou hast redeemed with thy great power and by thy strong hand." So he was confessing where they were at. He had a proper perspective of what was going on here. He realized that they were in this situation because of sin, and God was the one that had the answers. God was the only one that has the ability to completely repair, in this case, the broken wall. He was the only one that had the full solution and ability. What, the king's cupbearer, what was he going to do in this situation? He didn't have a lot of ability on his own. And he realized, when, and the same thing we need to realize, and that God is the in the restoration business. This is what he does. He specializes in restoration. And we can see this time and time again where God says, though you've forsaken me, just come back and I'll take care of it. I'll heal you. I will forgive you. I will do all these things for you. And we could read the whole chapter of Matthew 18, but I just want to turn there for a little bit of inspiration from Matthew 18. We generally use verse 15, but let's start here just reading verse 14. And this is talking about how God would go out. He would hunt down one out of the 90 and nine. He is not willing that any should perish. And this verse 14 says, "Even so, it is not the will of your Father which is heaven that one of these little ones should perish." And this, of course, could go back to the first part of Matthew 18, which talks about offenses and offending little ones land you in a special place of judgment of God where you really don't want to be. It's the worst kind of judgment to offend an innocent child. But that's not our subject for this morning. The point is, God is not willing that any should perish. He's in the restoration business. He wants to be part of rebuilding these broken walls. Point number four is to have a plan and a vision. And that comes from chapter 2. It was kind of impressive to me as I studied this again, how Nehemiah had obviously put a little bit of thought into this whole process of what he was going to do next. When the king asked him, what was he going to ask for? And he had a little bit of a plan. Let's just read chapter 2, verse 6 and 7. "And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, for how long shall thou journey be, and when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Moreover, I said to the king, if it please the king, let letters be given to me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over until I come to Jerusalem." And then the letter, the king's forest, and different things that he felt like he was going to need for the way. And then in verse 12, when he gets there, he arose by night, he took a few men with him, and "neither told I any man what God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem, neither was there any beast with me save the beast that I rode on." So he went out and he kind of surveyed the damage. And then we go down here in verse 17 and 18. He says he had a plan for the people. He conveyed this plan. He had a vision of what this was going to look like when the wall was rebuilt. And he inspired the people. He said, "Then said I unto them, ye see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come, and let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which is good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, Let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for the work." So they knew this was going to take some work. Broken down wall is not going to be an easy thing to necessarily build up, but they were ready to do it. They're like, they were both ready. Both Nehemiah and the people are ready to address the situation and ready to build again. So the next part here, the next point would be the enemy trying to discourage. Before they even got started here, verse 19, we'll just continue down here. "But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant the Ammonite and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, What is this thing that ye will do? Will ye rebel against the king? And then they had an answer for them. The God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore, we as servants will rise and build, but ye have no portion nor right nor memorial in Jerusalem." So the enemy is always out to discourage people, saying, you know what? This rebuilding is going to be too much work. It's a big project. It's bound to fail. It's going to be a waste of time. You might as well just stay home. Don't bother driving over to his house. No need to talk to him. Saying something's just going to make things worse. What's the other ones? Time will heal it. We'll let that. It'll resolve itself after a while. We'll just ignore the problem. It'll go away. Or the other option is to go and tell 6 or 11 or however many of your friends, see what they have to say about it. So these are things that the enemy says to us. This is the way to just kind of ignore the thing, just skip over it. Let's pretend that it didn't happen. And that's kind of what they were saying here. Just ignore it. You've accepted this broken wall for however many years. You've walked around this rubble. You've dealt with it. It's there. Yes, it's annoying to walk around stones that are falling down. Yes, it's kind of a mess. And it would be nice to have a wall to defend against the enemy, but it's just too much work. But then point number 6, and this is kind of the main point of the message, is to get to work with a positive attitude. And we see that here in chapter 2, verse 18. We talked about how they strengthened their hands for the work. They built themselves up. They were ready. Let's do it. We can handle this. We have it under control. And I was just inspired again as I read this passage, how it starts out in chapter 3, verse 1. We have the priest here helping out. "Then Elisha, the high priest, rose with his brethren, the priest, and they built the sheep gate, and they sanctified it and set up the doors. Even under the tower of Mia, they sanctified it under the tower of Hananiel." And then we go clear down to the end of the chapter, and we have in verse 31, "After him repaired Melchiah, the goldsmith's son, unto the place of the Nethinims and the merchants over against the gate Mifked, unto the going up of the corner, and between the going up the corner and the sheep gate repaired the goldsmiths and the merchants." So this thing had come full circle. We had priests. We had the daughters in there that we always talk about. And then we have all these other people. Some were building doors. Some were building gates. Some were building wall. And everybody had a part in the work. And I just think about this. When I was meditating on this point, one of the biggest things of the enemy to sow disunity, and we see this so much in our world today, is divide between this people group and this people group over here. So we say, well, that's the old people, or that's the way the youth look at it. And we divide it by young and old. We divide it by rich and poor. We say, well, he will never understand me because he's too poor, or he's too rich, or he's this. Or we say, well, this fella, he's a really smart fella, and this guy here, he's a little bit special, simple, whatever word you want to fill in there. We divide it by that. Or we say, well, this fella, he's really, really quiet. And I don't know what you call the not so quiet people, the noisy ones. But we divide up in these categories. And we see that in our world today, they're so obsessed by this people group over here shouldn't be able to see anything in common with these people because they do it different. They eat a different kind of food. They do something different. Whatever you want to divide it by, that's one of the techniques of the enemy. And it was just amazing how all these people pulled together, they ignored those differences, and got to work. So what are the things to work in rebuilding? Well, like we mentioned, some of these answers are Matthew 18. And Matthew 18, verse 15, we'll just go to that. Keep your finger here. We may be back a time or so to Matthew 18. Of course, the first thing that it mentions here is that it says, "Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee." So I was like, what does trespass really mean? "Go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother." So what are we supposed to learn from this verse? Jesus has the answer. He's already figured this out. He knows us better than we know ourselves. So this trespass thing, we say, well, if someone's offended us, someone's hurt us. And of course, one of the things I do want to mention here is there are some little slights, some little things. I am part of two different families that kind of like to joke around, and sometimes it stings just a little wee bit. And we joke and we laugh it off and whatever, and we keep going. So those kind of things we're not talking about because it's just our family, and maybe it's our friends that do that to us once in a while. They laugh about whatever it is, the vehicle we drive or the phone that we bought or the property that we, whatever, the business that we're involved in. There's all kinds of stuff. But we're not talking about these kind of things. We're talking about stuff that we just were deeply hurt and we can't move past it. And it's broken that relationship. The tower is down. The wall is not connected. We're not, the doors and the sheep gate and the wall is just, it's not coming together. So this word trespass basically means sinned, where it's a serious breach of trust. But I thought it was interesting here. The hurt person is supposed to make the first move. They're not supposed to call the bishop or the minister or the deacon. They're supposed to reach out to the man privately and sit down and tell him exactly what the problem is. Open it all up. Don't leave some little corner here and say, well, they probably know this. Get it out on the table so that it can be dealt with. So, but this is privately, so that there can be trust and peace rebuilt. We don't need to skip to step two or step three of going bringing three other brothers along or calling a church leader to make this happen. The whole goal is to not get to step two and three. If he hears you, the verse says if he hears you, that means he just sits down. And of course, we know how hard that is, at least for me. So, is to sit down and listen. So for the offended, they make the phone call, they set up the meeting, they go and sit down and let's talk about this. So that's step one. But then the offender, for them, I just wrote it down this way. For the offender, it's time to be quiet for once. And I guess I'm talking to myself here. But too often we like to say, well, I'm sorry, but, and then we undo our sorry by just everything else we say right after that. Just totally annul our sorry. We weren't really sorry. Because we want to justify. The reason I said that was, or the reason I did this was, don't matter. At that point, it doesn't matter. Your brother's offended. They want you to hear them out, or your wife, or your children, or your fill in the blank here. and like I say, that's hard for some of us to do, but at times that I bit my tongue and said I'm sorry and just walked away, it worked out better than saying I'm sorry and then adding another 15 minutes of verbiage to the sorry. The second thing in getting to work here is physically working together. It's just amazing to me how people that you go to church with, people that you know, acquaintances, whatever. I thought it was interesting. I thought of this illustration. I had a customer that's told me this many times. She said, you know, the first couple times I came into your store, I didn't really like you. But she said, now that we've learned to know each other, she said, I don't know if it's you or me or we learned to know each other. She said, I just really am sad to see you have moved over there to Thurmont. She said, she's a neighbor to my in-laws. But anyway, she said, maybe someday we're going to come over and see you. And it's just amazing how our first impressions maybe are incorrect. We don't really know each other until we've spent some time physically spending time together. And I thought about the 52 days that these people worked together, and I thought about the church rebuilding project that some of us were involved in a few years ago. I learned to know a few of you better than I ever would have just sitting around a campfire, although that is one in the list here that we could do. But just to work together, to be on the school board, to be on the land searching committee, to be on the whatever, different outreach committee, different things that you serve, it's like, wow, I didn't know that brother cared so much about that. I didn't know he was passionate about school. I didn't know. And maybe being part of the school board and going to CASB and some of these things, I've just used that for example, does get you fired up about education or children need to learn. But when you're pulling together for a common goal, there is something about that. And like I say, the world or Satan likes to divide us, but we have way more in common than when we have differences. But when we're working together, we learn to know each other better. And like I say, this can be committee work. This can be physically. We have church cleaning coming up here in about a month. Show up, do your part. Some of you will be building gates and bars like these people here, and some of you will be building wall. Everybody has their talent. Not everybody in Nehemiah's day was doing the same thing. Each group had their spot, and it all meshed together and fit together when it was done. So while I'm mentioning it, church cleaning is the last Saturday of April, and unless we have reason to change it, it'll be that perpetually. So, but my point is, working together does benefit us. And then another part of rebuilding is to build positively. You remember the point number 6, if you're keeping track, is to get to work with a positive attitude. And that if these people just say, wow, this is just a huge job. There is no way we're going to get this done. I've got hay to make. I've got whatever it is to do. I thought about filling in all the hoof trimming and wiring and calves to feed and whatever else you all do for a living. I got tractors to sell. Whatever it is, I've got all these things to do. How in the world am I going to fit this into my schedule? And I hear you. I felt that way myself many a time. But the other part, even on the spiritual side, I just wrote it down this way. If you choose to focus on the negative, you will have a miserable life. If you're always looking at the negative saying, well, it can't be done, there's nothing much to do about it, and you get stuck in a rut, in a mindset. And I'm going to say, this is part of the reason I brought this message. This came to me. I was out driving around to some sewing stores, selling the chairs. This is the little thing that I do. And I was just amazed. I came home and told my family, I said, people's mind is probably the biggest thing that limits their success. And I believe this in church life as well. If you have a negative outlook, I go into one store and they're like, oh, you know what? We're really struggling and business is down and yeah, our fabric's not selling very well and whatever. And this is a 75-year-old lady pushing a walker around that's the salesperson for the place. Yeah, there's not much going to change. They might as well close the doors and cut their losses. That literally happened. That was the first spot that I stopped at the other day. Two stores later, I got in there. I could just tell it was clicking. The guy had a business mind. He understood. He's like, yep, we're introducing new products. He said, we've got a promotional introductory offer on this one product, and it's selling like crazy. Business is better than ever. He said, we just can hardly keep up. And a huge part of, okay, so age was a factor. I get it. That lady was an employee, not the manager, but that was part of it. But this man was in his 60s as well. So, but a lot of it was a mindset. And another store I stopped at, it was an older couple. The guy had started 3 or 4 business. My point is, don't get lost in all these illustrations. The point is, negativity is not going to get you anywhere. And it is a choice. We have our children. They say, oh, school is just terrible and it's dumb and I don't know why I have to do this. And school goes rotten for them. They get terrible grades in that quarter and you say, straighten up. It's time to look at this differently. School's about over. The sun's shining. It's a beautiful day. You get it, go out and play recess. It's all kinds of positive things to look at. You have friends to share with. You hear and tell stories at school. I'm just using that as an illustration as well. But we look at the positive. We need to choose to look. So I can look back here and say, well, this brother, he doesn't have this. And this guy, he doesn't keep good track of his children after church. And this guy, well, he has got a little issue with his finances. This guy has a little issue with this. This fellow's a little bit too loud in this way. And this fellow's just not loud enough. And nobody does anything right here. And soon we don't have a church. We just have people that we don't like that we sit together with. And we go home discouraged instead of inspired. And I love you all, okay? Let me back up. That sounded kind of bad. But the point is, I'm sure you've done some of these things. At least if you're normal, then that's being judgmental as well. Didn't mean for this part to be humorous, but you get what I'm saying. Where we start to focus, the day is rainy and everything's going south. And it will be that way. It'll just be miserable. So focus on the positive. Well, that was the biggest point for the morning, is getting to work and making it happen. But then I see here in Nehemiah, chapter 4, verse 22 and 23, being on guard against the enemy. And this is a serious issue when it comes to rebuilding trust. Let's just read chapter 4, verse 22 and 23. It says, likewise, at the same time, I said unto the people, let everyone with his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be a guard unto us and labor on the day. So neither I, nor my brethren, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us put off our clothes, save that everyone put them off for washing. And you're like, wow, that was a dirty bunch. And they sat around in their clothes for days on end. The point is, they took it seriously. And I just wrote down this way, that in the night is when the enemy loves to attack. So you're over here in your house. The offended is laying in his bed thinking this over again, say, you know what? He told me he was sorry, but was he really sorry? And the offender, he's over in his bed saying, you know what? What was this all about? I mean, he said he forgave me, but was he really serious about it? And we start second-guessing these things, and our minds play games with us, and we start undoing all the good that we had. More stones got torn down instead of built up when we start beginning to meditate on these things and not taking them at face value, and we don't have that trust level rebuilt. So we really need to be on guard against the enemy when we're trying to rebuild, and we get the first couple stones up, and he just tries knocking them all down with a bunch of doubt. So, and we see that Satan, he is constantly trying tricks on us. Nehemiah 6, we could read this whole chapter. He tried all kinds of things to get Nehemiah's project to fail. He doesn't like to see walls get rebuilt. The more people are divided, and we mentioned this in our country, the more people are divided in our church, the happier he is. And we see here, I'll just skip through a couple of these verses in chapter 6, where Sanballat sent messengers, and he said, I want you to go out here and have a meeting. And then down here in the next part, he gets to, and well, let's just read verses 5 to 9 here. Sanballat, his servant, then sent Sanballat, his servant, unto me in like manner the fifth time. This is the fifth time they tried stuff. with an open letter in his hand, wherein was written, "It is reported among the heathen, and Geshmu said it, that thou and the Jews think to rebel, for which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king according to these words. And thou hast also appointed prophets to preach of thee at Jerusalem, saying, There is a king in Judah, and now shall it be reported to the king according to these words. Come now, therefore, let us take counsel together. Then I sent unto him, saying, There are no such things done as thou sayest, but thou feignest them out of thine own heart." It's fake news. "For they all make us afraid, saying, Their hands shall be weakened from the work, that it be not done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands." So this is one that's a real issue. They just made it up just to ruin the project. There was nothing to it. And then there's other things here where they tried to say good words about, we call it misinformation today. It was lies. So that's something to be on guard against. The enemy's going to try to tear down. He's going to try to deceive you. He's going to try to get you to doubt and a second guess. Well, the next part I see here in Nehemiah's day is good communication. And that comes from chapter 4, verse 19 and 20. They needed to have a system. This wall, I remember looking this up. I think it was, does anyone remember, about a mile and a half, 2 miles total length of the wall the whole way around. I think if you add it up, it's something in that range. So not huge distance, but far enough. If you take 2 miles and put it in a square, you're a half mile from the person that's working on the opposite corner if you happen to be clear down here. So they need to have some system, some way of helping each other out when the enemy did come. So it says here, "For the builders, everyone," this is chapter 4, verse 18, "For the builders, everyone had his sword girded by his side, and so builded. And he that sounded the trumpet was by me. And I said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, The work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, far from another. In what place, therefore, ye hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye thither unto us, for our God shall fight for us." So we see here that they had good communication. If we know what's going on, if we have good communications, then we don't need to be suspicious about people's motives. Why did he say that? Why did he do this? Why did he go here? We have that good communication. We have that understanding. And we can trust our brother and say, you know what? I'm sure he had a reason for doing what he did. I'm sure he had a reason for saying what he did. And we don't let the devil get in there and place all these seeds of doubt. And when we do get a distress signal, somebody calls us up and says, you know what, I'm really struggling with this. Help me see this a little clearer. I just need some help. That we hear that trumpet call and we jump up, and it could be just someone you know and trust. This is not meant to bypass Matthew 18 and jump to having a sob story for all your friends. This is when you truly need some input and advice, someone to hear you out. You give that call, and somebody sits down with you and says, let's think through this clearly. Let's look at this from all sides. And the brother that's on the wall a half mile away comes over and gives you a boost, helps you get the brick laid in your corner, gets it squared back up again, gets it on so that it all meshes together. And then when you give a call, he returns the favor. Like, we're always going to be reciprocal in this. Sometimes I'm down, and sometimes you're up, and sometimes you're down, and sometimes I'm up. And it's one of the huge blessings of church life is that we can help kind of balance each other out. And it's a wonderful blessing. And then, of course, the final conclusion, like I say, this is meant to be a positive message, is chapter 6, verse 16. "And it came to pass, when all our enemies heard thereof, and all the heathen that are about us saw these things, they were much cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was wrought of God." So to recap, the children of Israel had accepted broken walls and defeat. They accepted a dysfunctional church, let's call it, just to put it in our day. And they were at the mercy of the enemy. Anytime the enemy wanted to take advantage of them, the wall was down. The enemy could just come in, snatch, do whatever, and they had no defense. But Nehemiah, 1,000+ miles away, had a vision, saw that there could be something better. There's something better available for you if you don't accept defeat. That a strong wall to defend against the enemy inspired the people, completed the wall in record time. The enemy was forced to defend, was thwarted. They failed because he was able to rally unity within the group. And when it all got done, they had to admit that God was the source of these things. And that's really my desire, is to be a helper building on the wall here at Keysville. It's where God has called us to be. And that we each work at a door, we each work at a wall, we each work at a corner, wherever God has called you to work, that you willingly do your part and blend into one strong, unified church. And this is where I just copied Will's verse, John 17, verse 21. We'll read it the second time. It'll have a little different twist to it now that with the message. John 17, 21, that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us, that the world may know that thou hast sent me. So we want the people around us to see it's God's work. And I want them to be so inspired by God's work and what he's doing here at Keysville that they want to be part of it. And we just studied here in Numbers 23, verse 23, it shall be said of Keysville, Daystar, whatever you want to fill in the blank, what hath God wrought? Let's kneel for prayer.